might be. Somebody remind me again. Where am I? All right. That sounds a little better. I was just getting your vocals warmed up. So I'm Yara Allen, and I have one of the best jobs ever. That I'm glad you asked. That job is to create the Georgetown, Kentucky Justice Jump Off Choir. Oh, you cheer now. You cheer now. So we kind of feel out the room a little bit, find out who's in the room. So I need to see you slip your hands up if you sing soprano. That's right, he's pointing to somebody next to him. If they're not saying it, go ahead on and put them out there. Slip your hands up if you sing alto. Slip them up if you sing tenor. Bass baritone. And outside so nobody can hear you. I want everybody who sings outside so nobody can hear them to come up on the stage. No, seriously. 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 Come on. Come on, this is come on. Give them a hand, y'all. She knows exactly where to go. I honestly need about, what can we hold, about 25 people? About 25 people to come up and help us lift this music. And if while people are coming, you say, I don't see myself represented, that's because you're sitting down there. We're not going to do Handel's Messiah, I promise you. Not the first song, anyway. It's looking almost right. If you look up here and you see that we're missing somebody, that somebody's you. All right, come on. There you go. There you go. This Justice Jump Off Choir is looking right now. All right. All right. I would say last call, but if you start feeling something like you want to get up and sing, just come on up. All right? What they don't know is that I'm going to take choir dues. So what we need to do is kind of pull in a little bit, just a little bit. Let's start off by singing, "We Shall Not Be Moved." Now here's your part. Your part is not to sit and watch us. It is to actually stand and engage with us. And we always ask that you stand because the motto is that we stand together because we stand together. So it's sort of symbolic, right? So if you feel up to it, if you would, please stand with us. And if you absolutely cannot stand, we understand that. Designate somebody to stand for you because that's what we all should be doing, standing for those who cannot stand. So now, you notice we don't have drums on the stage, right? That's where you come in. We need a whole rhythm section. And it goes boom, pop, boom, pop, boom, pop, boom, pop. Now the boom is your foot stomping, and the pop is your hand clapping. All right, here we go. Boom, pop, boom, pop, boom, pop. That's it. Can we take that up just a little bit? Keep the boom pop going. I heard some harmony back here. Here we go. We're fighting for our families.
We shall not be moved.
We're fighting for our families.
We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
Yeah. Of movement, went through the church, it's back in the movement. The song says, so glad I'm here, so glad I'm here, so glad I'm here in freedom's name, hallelujah, so glad I'm here, so glad I'm here, so glad I'm here in freedom's name. Y'all hear my southern draw? I love it. Okay, and so it simply goes, here's choir rehearsal. What's the key? Hit it for me. Can we do that? How about just doing this? Let's just pop this one until it's time to clap. Thank you.
name.
Yeah. Come on, let me hear you holler if you're glad you're here. If you're glad you're on the right side of history, let me hear you. If you're on the right side of justice, let me hear you. All right. Where's my timekeeper? Where's my timekeeper? How much time do we have?
We got all night.
We got, we got all night. So we're gonna let Total Praise Choir come up. Now, while they're coming up, let's just do like you know, like the preachers back in the day just said, we're gonna get this piece of song while they're coming up. Just a piece, right? So they're making their way up. No, choir can stay. They're gonna come up. They're still coming. And some of them are already here, right? Total Praise. So while they're coming, we sing a song in the movement that says, everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. Now here's a part that's gonna take some commitment. And before this campaign fails, we'll all go down to jail. And we'll go because everybody's got a right to live. You believe it? Everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live. And before this campaign fails, we'll all go down to jail. Because everybody's got a right to live. Everybody's got a right to live.
Called Hold On, and we want you all to join us. So I want you all, if you can, just stand up on your feet for a minute, because we're going to enjoy this song, because we're going to hold on. So come on, stand on your feet and clap your hands like this. I need that. I want everybody to join in. Yesterday, a man came to me. He said, how can you smile when the world is tumbling down? And I said, here's my secret. When I wanna cry, I take a look around and I see that I'm getting by. So I hold on.
Hold on.
The change is coming.
Change is coming.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Don't you worry.
Don't worry about a thing.
So hold on.
Hold on.
You can make it.
You can make it.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Everything.
Everything will be all right.
Some people like to worry. Some people like to hide. Some people like to run away with pain inside. Now it's my business. You do what you wanna do. But if it don't work out, here's what you gotta do. Just hold on.
Hold on.
You can make it.
You can make it.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Don't you worry.
Don't worry about a thing.
Just hold on.
Hold on.
You can make it.
You can make it.
Hold on.
Hold on.
Everything.
Everything will be all right.
Say la la.
Got me messed up. I really need Damon Thayer to hear this. What's up, Georgetown? Woo! That's what I'm talking about. My name is Tana Fogel. I'm one of the tri-chairs for the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign.
And I'm Pam McMichael. I'm also a tri-chair of the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign.
And later on in the program, you'll meet the rest of our team. And Ebony and Avani is just going to break it up and bring you some really important announcements and some stuff that we've been doing. Does anybody know what this tour is called? What do you say? Okay, can I get that right now? We can do more tour. We can do more tour. We can do more. That's what I like. I get some energy going on around here.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, we've been on this tour. National has come in, and we've been on this tour for a few days. We started on Friday. Do I have any Covington, Northern Kentucky people in here? And then we went down to Eastern Kentucky. We went down to Corbin, and then we went down to Hazard.
All right.
And my. We ended up in Georgetown. So the We Can Do More tour, they're going to tell you about that a little bit later. But I am so proud to be in Georgetown tonight with all of our planning team and all of our speakers. And we have some people. And when we say We Can Do More tour, what I need you all to know is that we do not endorse any candidates. We are a movement. And this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. However, before the tour even got here, we had a representative that did more. We had two representatives that did more. They got us into the Capitol on the last 40 days of nonviolent fusion, more direct action. And one of those representatives is in the House, and that is Representative George Brown. For those that don't know, they had to write a letter to the Attorney General because our governor would not let us in. And then when he wanted to let us in, he said two by two as if we are animals on Noah's Ark, and we're not.
We are not. Thank you, Tana. Hey, how many want to be more connected to this movement? All right. So pull out your cell phone right now. How many times are in a program are you going to get asked to do that? Pull out your cell phone right now. I'm not kidding. Pull it out. Pull your cell phone out. Hold them up. Let us see them. All right. Okay. Here's the number. You want to text this number. You ready? Are you ready? 90975. I usually say 90975. I was just trying to be clear here. All right. 90975, and type in capital letters the word moral, M-O-R-A-L. It's going to connect you to this movement in another level than you already are. All right, we are live. We are Facebook Live from the Poor People's Campaign tonight so that people all across the country and world can see us. We encourage you to take a selfie, post to Facebook, Instagram, tweet with hashtag Facebook. Thank you. Tweet with hashtag Facebook, and let's get the word out about what's happening all up in here tonight.
Hold on, Pam.
Yes.
Now, we know that some people misuse tweeting. But we really need y'all to tweet tonight.
Yes, we got to. That's right. Tweet it out.
Hashtag Poor People's Campaign.
And hashtag Poor People's Campaign. All right? We want to thank Reverend Barber and the national staff for being here, for accepting our invitation to bring the Moore Tour to Kentucky. From Benham to Bowling Green, Kentucky. From Corbin to Covington, from Hopkinsville to Hazard, from Eddyville to Frankfort and Louisville and Lexington, we've been all over the state with this campaign, and it's only the beginning as we move toward June 20, 2020. Thank you.
Now, I'm going to do this at the end, but I need y'all to get with me right now. Did y'all hear the date that Pam just said? What about this side? Okay, so can we bring that together as we get started? 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, because I need y'all to shout that out. Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready? Are y'all ready? Let's do it!
Oh, y'all give a bigger praise than that. Y'all give out some claps. Come on now. We're here for justice. If you will, won't you go into a word of prayer with me? God of ages past, God of present years, and God of future, We know you to be a God of justice, a God of liberty, a God of love, a God of setting the captives free. And we've come that we might stand on your word and on your promises. We come for no other reason. It's not about us, but it's all about doing your hesed, doing your blessed love, that we might understand that there are folk out there, folk in here, who are hurting. And just as you heard the Israelites and their cry, we know you are hearing our cries. And so we come standing knowing that we're already victorious, but that we must do what you have asked us to do. Have your way this evening. Touch the preachers, touch the speakers, touch the singers, touch those of us who are just sitting and just ready to go out. Touch us so that we might be a moral movement. So that you get all the glory. And for me, it's in the name of the one who I know as Jesus. Others know as other gods, but we come praying this prayer, and everybody said together, amen. Amen.
I am Will Jones, president here at Georgetown College, and on behalf of the Georgetown College Tigers, we welcome you, Reverend Barber, and we welcome the Poor People's Campaign. I grew up in Kinsey Holler, Kentucky. My mom was 13 years old when she got married. She was an eighth grade dropout. My dad was a ninth grade dropout. He dropped out to work in the coal mines to make a living for our family. So when you saw me walk up on the stage, you heard I was a president, you probably didn't expect that. But the thing that saved my life, and I mean that because all the men I'm related to are in prison because of drugs and alcohol, or they're dead because of that lifestyle, including my dad who died of a drug overdose a month before my wife Amy and I got married. Thank God that man and my mom told me from the age of 8 up, you will be a college graduate. They saw that as a way out of poverty. Not just physical poverty, but also emotional and spiritual poverty as well. And I can tell you, as president of Georgetown College, we don't just care what students are learning, head knowledge. Yes, we do teach students that folks on the right will say that people are poor because of personal decisions. We teach our students that. We also will teach our students that people on the left say that people are poor because of systems in our society that keep them poor. I think there's probably truth in both of those statements, having grown up poor. But we don't just stop there. That's just head knowledge. We also offer heart knowledge to our students. You remember the Charlottesville, Virginia white supremacist rally a few years ago? Young woman was killed there. Senator Orrin Hatch, a Republican from Utah, said, "My brother did not die fighting Hitler in Germany for Nazi ideas to go unchecked here at home." For Nazi ideas to go unchecked here at home. Here at Georgetown College, we offer heart knowledge to our students as well as head knowledge. So our students are taught the Good Samaritan story. Teacher, how can I get into heaven? How can I gain eternal life? What did Jesus say? What was the moral of the story? Who was the person? Who was the neighbor? The one who showed mercy. Show mercy to poor people, students. Show mercy to other folks who are different than you. In addition to that story, our students learned Matthew 25. Matthew 25. What did Jesus say? If you've done it to the least of these, my brothers and sisters, who have you done it to, Christians?
Me.
Jesus. We teach our students that. And we also teach them from Acts what Paul wrote. God has made of one blood all peoples of the earth. God has made of one blood all peoples of the earth. So on behalf of Georgetown College, the college here in the bluegrass area of the Commonwealth of Kentucky that offers students an education of the mind, an education of the heart, on behalf of Pastor Brian, we welcome you to Georgetown College, where we offer a championship-level education of the heart and mind, and we stand with poor people because Jesus stood with poor people. Thank you.
We must be honest about the foundations of the political and economic systems we call America. I love America because of her potential, but I know that America will never even get close to being a more perfect nation until we are honest about the politics of rejection.
I want to tell you about some of the leaders who are building the Poor People's Campaign. Callie Greer from Selma, Alabama, who had to bury her daughter, Venus, because she didn't have health care.
I'm here today to share my daughter's Venus's story. Venus discovered a small lump in her breast and she wasn't insured. Venus had to be approved for every prescription and every piece of medical equipment that she needed. I'm standing here today in solidarity with the Poor People's Campaign because no one should have to bury their child in America because they don't have health care insurance.
I'm 46 years old. I've lived in poverty here in West Virginia every day of my life. And I'm working. I am working poor with a bachelor's degree. I'm doing the best I can with what I have.
I'm a second generation fast food worker and I've experienced the cycle of poverty firsthand. Growing up, I watched my mother endure long hours of backbreaking labor, doing everything she could to feed me and my sisters. My employer barely pays me enough to pay rent and utilities, let alone the medical expenses with my mother.
I worked 41 years in the coal mines. I have black lung, and it's just unfathomable what these poor coal miners have to go through in order to get what they have worked for and deserve.
I'm a Vietnam veteran. My only chance of going to college was joining the Army.
It was one thing to know that you didn't have water and you couldn't afford your water. It's a whole nother to find out that they shut off your entire community and none of you matter.
But when I lost my housing, healthcare, and income all at the same time, I was terrified, panicked.
Now I'm also a Kansas farmer's wife. Kansas farmers are committing suicide at a far greater rate than the national average. Why? Because they're stressed out. They're stressed out. They're usually in debt up to their eyeballs because they can't pay for all the equipment that it takes to run a farm. And they're in the most dangerous line of work there is, yet many can't afford to buy health insurance. We have no hospital. We are in a food desert. We have one grocery store for the whole county. Our neighbor, my husband's uncle, still drinks pond water self-treated with chlorine. He had to have a kidney removed at age 64. And the year before that, his wife died of some unknown cancer.
Hi, my name is Pamela Rose. I'm from Niles County, Alabama. And I live in a mobile home with my two kids. And I got raw sewage. I don't have no money. I'm poor. And I have to travel back and forth to Birmingham to take my daughter with the CPAP machine, don't have a car, and don't have no way to take her.
This is the largest encampment in Aberdeen. There's about 1,000 people in a town of 16,000 who are homeless.
In my community, we were all shut off for the day because none of us could afford our water bills. In the past, my family wasn't able to afford electricity in the winter. It was very hard on all of us.
But the indigenous people in the surrounding communities are being affected. We talk about health care. We talk about worrying about the environment, but yet when they're allowing open pit mines and letting it leak into the land, into the water, the high rate of cancer and the high bills of health is going to continue to raise because of corporations and greeds and politicians that don't want to listen.
There's a new chemical company that's producing another carcinogen in our community. It's amazing the people who are just started dying of cancer. And when my wife was diagnosed with cancer, I was amazed at the black women that would ring our doorbell and walk in the door and pull a wig off to show my wife that I have it too.
this wall, this is sin of the highest order.
I put my life on the line at 17 years old to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And right now what we have domestic enemy right here.
When there are 38 million poor children, when 60% of African Americans are poor, when 65% of Latinx are poor, when 40% of Asians are poor, when there are 67 million poor white people, we must say, this is not right.
Somebody's hurting our people, and it's gone on
far too long,
and we won't be silent anymore.
Our brothers and sisters are sleeping on the streets. For a country this rich to have so many people poor, it's immoral and it's wrong.
Our backs are against the wall, and we got no choice but to push.
We lift our voices for justice. We put our bodies on the line for mercy. And together we will proclaim liberty throughout the land for the enslaved, for the poor, and for us all.
Yeah. Follow that breaking news in Albany, where a large group of protesters have moved into the street.
Washington Avenue between City Hall and Lark Street closed down.
Protesters with the Poor People's Campaign of Indiana.
2 o'clock on the east coast. 2 o'clock in the middle, 2 o'clock on the west coast, a wave, and the historians tell us it's never happened before.
Our communities, Muslim communities, who have joined the Poor People's Campaign, you can count on us.
Our democracy is in trouble.
Our democracy is in trouble.
And we come to demand.
And we come to demand.
Second warning.
Because it's crucial that we make ourselves heard. No one is listening. We write letters, we make calls. No one is listening. So we gotta make our find a way to make ourselves heard.
We are the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And we are here. We are poor. We are clergy. And we're here to say to our nation's capital and to the highest court in this land, that everybody has a right to live. Everybody has a right to learn. Everybody has a right to love. Everybody has a right to living wages. Everybody has a right to vote. Everybody has a right to thrive. To thrive in this society.
Everybody say,
I believe that we will win. I believe that we will win. I believe that we will win.
We don't fight, and it taught us how.
The poor and their clergy. We read Article 6 of the Kentucky State Constitution that said we have a right to free assembly.
We are demanding that we stop the war on our poor.
We demand the right to vote.
The right to vote.
We need to cease and desist immediately or you'll be arrested.
There will be a movement that will break through the town and bring people together to save the heart and the soul of this democracy and this world.
Hello, Kentucky. And so you can see that people all over the country are mobilizing. I want to share with you that after we finished the first 6 weeks of organizing from Mother's Day to the summer solstice in 2018, we had over 38 million reshares of this, that people have been being inspired in other countries. We now have 43 coordinating committees across the country. We had a Congress that brought together over 1,200 people from all 50 states, plus religious leaders, moral advocates. Our forum on poverty was the largest of presidential forums to this date. We had more candidates at its time, had more than any other place. We've written now a poverty justice budget
to tell the truth that we do not have a scarcity of money, we have a scarcity of moral courage. Many, many outlets, papers are beginning to cover this movement, and we are now on this, we must do more mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating people for the movement who vote. We're not just registering people to vote, we're registering for the movement to vote, for a long-term movement. And we are making our way to the Mass Poor People's Assembly Moral March on Washington, June 20, 2020, to shake the foundations of this nation, and not just the march, but a poor people's assembly. And we have promised you that on that day, it will not be people speaking on behalf of impacted people. It will be impacted leaders speaking on their own behalf and challenging this nation with their stories and their solutions. We are going to break the heart of this nation so that this nation will repent and turn in a new way. And we do it because we love justice, and we love love, and we love mercy. I want tonight to bring greetings on behalf of the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, the co-chair, and Roz Pellis, our senior advisor. They're not here tonight because they had to fly back for a court date in federal court in Washington, D.C., because during the 6 weeks, they were arrested for praying on the steps of the Supreme Court. The people that claim that they believe in religious freedom arrested them on the Supreme Court for praying and holding a flag. Nine of them. And today, some of them had to they had an agreement, but Roz and Shelley and Liz decided the day that they wanted to say, if you're going to say we were guilty of prayer and guilty of holding a flag on the steps of the Supreme Court, we plead guilty and we appeal, because we're going to challenge this at the higher levels. And they have a right to do that in the federal courts, because we've got to decide if we truly believe in religious freedom or if they're just people using the phraseology, but they only mean their kind of particular religiosity. I'm glad that all of you are here, Pam, and the chairs and all. We love you, the president. And I'm glad that the president mentioned his own upbringing and poverty, because we are not a left campaign or a right campaign. We don't even use that language. We believe in some things are just wrong and some things are right. That's the moral campaign. We believe some things are morally indefensible. They are economically insane and constitutionally inconsistent. And the reason those people up in those hollows were poor is not because they were lazy. It was because the greedy barons of the coal companies would steal the mineral out of the land and wouldn't pay the coal miners a living wage. That's why they're poor. How do I know that? Because my granddaddy was also a coal miner in West Virginia, and in the hills of West Virginia. And why do we say that, lastly? Because that's what Jesus said. There's not one scripture in the Bible where Jesus ever blamed poor folk for being poor. Now, some of us know the book. Some folk play with the book. But some of us read it, every bit of it. And there are over 2,000 scriptures in the Bible that talk about how society, not the church alone, but what society is supposed to do to address the issue of poverty, the stranger, the immigrant, the sick, the children, the women, and the least of these. And the Bible does not offer two sides. No, the Bible don't talk about no two sides now. And each side have equal moral. One side is hypocritical. And the other side is right, according to Scripture. Jesus said in the 23rd verse, 23rd chapter, he said, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, who have all this religiosity. You tithe even tea leaves, but you leave undone the weightier matters of the law." which is justice, huh? And faithfulness and mercy. We have poverty in America because we have a whole lot of religiosity, but very little dealing with the weightier matters of the law that God is very concerned about. And that is why when Jesus, that brown-skinned Palestinian Jew that I call Jesus, when Jesus preached his first sermon, not his second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth sermon, but his first sermon, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." And he was lifting that from Isaiah 58, 59, 60, 61, that whole section, where the prophets declared until the nation addressed what they call the bonds of wickedness, which were the economic ties on people's lives. And Jesus said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach good news to the poor." There were three words for poor. One of them Jesus never used. That was the one that talked about people being poor because they were lazy. The only words Jesus ever used for poor were the two words that spoke about the systems of poverty. And in Luke, his first sermon, he used the strongest word in Greek, ptokos, ptchos. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach good news to the ptokos, the poor." And ptokos means those who have been made poor by systems of economic denial. And so any religious faith that claims to be, I don't care, born again, saved, washed, baptized, dropped in the bucket, whatever it is, if it does not produce in you a quarrel with the systems of injustice, then that spirituality is terribly suspect and has nothing to do with the spirituality of the Gospels, according to Jesus, not William Barber. And so we're glad to be here tonight. We always feature testifiers. So the first thing we're going to have is some folk come forward and introduce themselves to talk about why they are part of the PPC, why they are mobilizing for this mass poor people's assembly in Mall March on Washington. And then we're going to have some folk talk about why we need to do this even the more. And then we have four testifiers speaking to the whole nation tonight. Thousands of people are joining us by live stream, and they're going to tell their stories. And as they tell their stories, they don't really need us to clap. They need us to join. They need us to say after they finish, "And we won't be silent anymore." If they feel like crying, we want the nation, because until we change the moral imagination of this nation, until the nation's heart is broken, America has never changed until her heart has been broken and she sees the ugliness of her ways. And the only way to do that is we have to put a face on the facts. That's what we're going to do, and then I'm going to try to come back and talk about why we're doing this in this moment and what the real facts are, and then we'll go home, but we won't go away. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here tonight.
My name's Megan Houston, and I'm one of the tri-chairs of the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign.
And where do you
live? And I live in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
My name is Arnold Farr, and I'm on the State Coordinating Committee for the Poor People's Campaign in Kentucky. And Megan and I want to talk a little bit. I want to connect this movement to the past, and then Megan's going to say a little bit about our present, our future, where we're going. So it bothers me every year in January when we celebrate the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr., and we get this version of King that Cornel West has called a whitewashed, manicured, sanitized, deodorized King for popular consumption. In other words, we reduce King to just a civil rights leader. That's powerful, but there's so much of King's vision that gets left out. And we sort of refuse to have conversations about the three evils that King talked about in American society. They're racism, poverty, and militarism. And the Poor People's Campaign, A Call for Moral Revival, has added ecological devastation. Over 50 years ago, in the late 60s, before he was assassinated, King was attempting to organize a poor people's campaign to bring attention to the gross level of poverty in the richest country in the world. King thought that poverty was so bad that over 50 years ago, we needed a poor people's campaign. But guess what? It's worse today. King was traveling the country in the late 60s, having conversations with poor working class black people, white people, Mexicans, and Native Americans. And he was bringing them together for a march on Washington, just like the one that took place in 1963. And many of us believe that that's why he was assassinated, because they were afraid that across the nation, there'd be more and more rooms of people coming together in solidarity that look like this room right now. When you realize that the enemy, the person keeping you in poverty, is not someone of a different race or a different color, but perhaps someone of your own, racism becomes necessary as a tool to divide us and keep us apart. But you can see we're not going to let that happen. And I'm thankful today that King passed away over 51 years ago, but his spirit remained alive, and his spirit had an outstretched arm. And in that hand was a baton. And on that baton was written the Poor People's Campaign. And I'm thankful that Dr. William Barber and Liz Leo Harris have invited all of us together to reach out our hands and take hold of that baton and keep running the race and not stop until we've seen social change and social justice.
June 20th, 2020. Put it in your calendars, put it in your phones. Now, you might think that Arnold Farr is just a smart professor who knows how to talk about history, but let me tell you, I've heard Arnold Farr talk about history on the marble floors of our state capitol that we occupied all night long. And so I'm here to tell you today that we are mobilizing towards Washington, D.C. on June 20th, 2020, but not just for a march or for a moment, but for a movement that will change this country. And Kentucky, we need you, because when Kentucky changes, this country will change. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? Thank you.
Okay. Good evening. My name's Amelia Cloud, and I'm one of the local chairs or local planners of the Poor People's Campaign here in Georgetown. And thank you all for coming this evening. I'm a member of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth and Georgetown Fairness that just passed a local fairness ordinance.
And I'm again going to say thank you for coming. My name is John Douglas. I am the president of the Scott County National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, known as NAACP. We'd like to thank all of you for being here, and we strongly support, and I'm happy to be part of the planning committee for this activity this evening. So we're going to take and bring forth some other individuals that you would like to hear from.
Okay. We have several speakers that will talk to you and share their own very personal stories. Our first person will be Amanda Hall.
Hello, my name is Amanda Hall. I live in Louisville, but I'm from Martin County. And being in a church tonight and driving here had me thinking about when I was small what a church represented, especially around this time of year. I remember the church was who would give me Christmas presents quite often because I grew up poor and in low-income housing apartments and then in trailers wherever we could fit. And I remember Martin County's beautiful, and this time of year, the orange and the reds and the browns on the trees, it's lovely. But our hills started going away, and then all of a sudden, I remember in high school, I went outside, and our creeks were black, and all the fish was dead, and after that, we didn't have clean drinking water. And around that time, the mine started shutting down, but the opioids started moving in, and every medicine cabinet had them. And before I knew, I was in a car wreck, and I had them too, and my straight A's went to F's, and I ended up in prison. And I would walk around because I didn't have anybody to send me a lot of money, and I never got a visitor because it was far away, and my family couldn't afford it. They shipped me across the state. And I would have holes in my state socks, and I would feel the concrete, and I would think, this is what you deserve, because that's what I'd been told. That's what we tell people that are poor and people that make mistakes and people that have mental health conditions and substance use disorder. And that's not what I deserved. And I'm sick of everyone telling us that. And that's why I'm here today. And that's why I care to be in these rooms and to care to be in these churches and places that save my life, because we have to stand up to save the lives of others. And I'll be the first person to graduate with my master's degree out of my family in May. No, that's why the Poor People's Campaign means so much to me. And thank y'all for having me here today.
Silent anymore. Next, we have Jeffrey Floyd come up.
Yes, my name is Jeffrey Floyd. I'm retired from the Army Medical, and I'm a veteran service connected. I had a job at the city of Lexington, for 2 years. Then I lost my job due to my cocaine addiction. Never thought I would become homeless, but it happened. From February 07 till February 09. I slept downtown on benches in front of the library and on the porch of churches on High Street. And on the porches of a church on Blackburn Street. Abandoned house I lived in for 3 months. No running water. No water, no lights. Bed bug everywhere. Me and two other friends. Family members didn't know me. They knew me when I was on top. But when you're down, they don't know you. Laughed at me while I was in my calamities. While I was in my troubles. I even slept behind my own church where I'm going at now, the House of God on Georgetown Street. But one day, I was in a crack house. While everybody was gone, I cried out to Yahweh and asked him to forgive me of my wrongs. Please help me and give me another chance. Tears falling down my face. I felt something come over me. I felt his presence on me. It was so strong that from that very hour, he began to deliver me from my addiction and my drugs until now. He delivered me. From this day forth, he has done that and gave me a new life.
Somebody is hurting our veterans. too long.
Far too long.
And we won't be.
And we won't be.
Our next speaker this evening is Coleman Eldridge. Some of you might know him. He lives here in Georgetown, and he was gracious enough to accept the invitation to join us this evening.
It's good to be home. We've got 8 days before an election, so to be home is a treat. You know, in thinking about what to say tonight, I got a call this morning that kind of changed everything. Because I could get up here and I could talk about worrying about where my next meal was going to come from. I grew up that way. So did many of us. I can talk about the fact that the only suicidal thought I've ever had in my life was the night my mother thought I was asleep, but I heard her crying to God saying, I can't do this anymore. And I thought, well, if I could take one thing off her plate, and the only thing that stopped me was the fact that 15 years before, she buried my father who had taken his own life. What I've learned through my experiences of poverty, of hunger, there's a couple of things. One, we are more than the circumstances of our birth or the circumstances of our lowest moment. And that I was fortunate enough to live in a community not too far from here in Cynthiana that did not judge our family for what we did not have, but invested in our family for what we could be. Reverend Barber, as you know, some people used to call that community. But we have some politicians today who call it socialism and communism and liberalism and all of these other things. It just used to be community. And so in the limited time that I have, I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about the millions of children across this country, the hundreds of thousands in this Commonwealth, who unfortunately tonight are living the same experiences that I grew up with. And it's not an indictment of their mamas or their daddies or their grandparents. It's not an indictment of them. It is an indictment of this Commonwealth. It is an indictment of our country. And that every moment we let go and we let this keep going, we are robbing our children of the dignity of their childhood. I'll wrap up by sharing this quick story. You know, the moment I knew I was poor wasn't when I was hungry. It was the day my mother got sick, and she got so sick, but because we didn't have any money, she kept saying, I'm not going to the doctor, I'm not going to the doctor, I'm not going to the doctor, and finally, she wasn't moving. And so I called the only doctor that I knew would come to the house, and I said, Dr. Brzezinski, I need for you to come and see my mom. And he said, son, I would, but you know I'm a vet, right? And I said, yeah, but she's not listening to me. He got there, and 5 seconds in, he said, call the ambulance. Now, my mother is here tonight because that ambulance came. My mother is here tonight despite the fact that we didn't have health care. Now, let me tell the whole story. I still got grounded for calling the ambulance. But see, I serve a God that made the blind see, the lame walk, and raised a man from the dead and never once asked if they were in his provider network. And if it's good enough, if it's good enough to be in the scriptures, then we need to stop asking ourselves, what would Jesus do, and start doing what Jesus showed us to do. God bless you, and thank you so much.
Next coming up will be Mr. Danny Woolham. Woolham, please come up.
Hello, my name is Danny Woolhams, and growing up white comes with many privileges.
Having my father's skin tone and my name and his name has allowed me to operate in a world that was built to leave many people behind. But I grew up to a single Honduran mother in a world far away from her own, and my life will always be a reflection of her experiences. My mom was not able to teach me Spanish when I was young because she was trying so much harder to learn English to fit into this new world that she had found herself in. I had to wait until later in life to learn la idioma de mi gente, the language of my people. I remember my mother trying to navigate this world in her second language. I remember the tears at the counter of her cell phone provider as she tried to explain something about her bill while there was a clear miscommunication between herself and the young man behind the counter. I've witnessed the isolation my mother felt as she desperately sought community that could support and understand her. Language is such a powerful thing. The right words can cause someone great harm and separate us from each other. But language can also be used to connect ourselves to shared history and to shared experiences. Language brings us home and creates new worlds for us to explore. It was welcoming church members and other Hispanic members of our community that my mother could find that helped her find her home here. It was people that stepped forward to celebrate her value that created a community for her. Because she moved here, she brought family members who have since worked to make healthcare in our state more accessible and who have started successful businesses that have allowed them to return to Honduras to advocate for a more just and transparent government, one that has been pillaged by the greed of those who have used economics to justify the existence of the impoverished. My mother was granted her citizenship this past July. After living in this country for 31 years, she finally has the opportunity to vote next month. It's that reason why I have never missed an election and why I celebrate supporting the voting rights and efforts of those who have been far too long suppressed from their vote. Language has far too long been used to suppress the vote, and I'm so excited to see my mother defy those efforts. I am thankful to be able to navigate the two worlds of both my parents and try to bridge those communities between them. The blessings of raw, open conversations have done so much more to build bridges of understanding than the walls that harsh words ever could. It is easy to slip into anger and despair when we talk to people with whom we disagree. So I'm thankful for the language of hope and resilience and love and peace. We have more in common than we are ever willing to admit. The American dream is often characterized by having material success, but I will always think of it the way my mother found it, by having a community of people together who celebrate and value your worth despite what makes us different. Those who've used language to share their love, not to tear people down. Our tomorrow is just, it's fair, and it's brighter than our today. And may your language never forget that. Right. Thank you.
And we won't be silent. Now I'm gonna do a discipline here before the choir. Y'all start making your way. Y'all is gonna go up in a second. But I wanna do something for the campaign, if I might, as an elder, if I will. I want to share a little wisdom because we're going to Washington, D.C. If we go to D.C. and you all and we tell everybody how we made it through, ain't nothing going to change. Because what they're going to say is, see, if you just had a good church or a good community. And because America, and I know it's difficult when you tell your stories to stay with what shouldn't have been. Sometimes in the resiliency God has given us, sometimes we celebrate the struggle we should have never had to go through. Y'all didn't hear that, did you? We consecrate the struggle. And I want to do this to help us. That man said, his mama had been here 31 years, and she finally had the right to vote, and we applauded that. That was not an applause. That was sick. That was sick. That was the statement of a sick nation. That a woman could come here, an immigrant, and work here and love here, and it would take her 31 years. Now, I'm glad Yahweh, but before Yahweh saved you, this society yes. should have had somewhere for homeless folk to live yes. in a society that makes people become drug addicts because we're an addictive society. Yes. I'm telling y'all,
the underside, the ugly side. And I know. That's why I like my man when he said, I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about all the thousands that shouldn't be. And I'm saying this across the nation because you all are so powerful. You all are so powerful. You see? That we got to tell sometimes, say, you know what? I got caught up on meth. Was it meth? What did you call it? Was it opioids? But they shouldn't have never been there to start with.
That's right.
And do you know the ugly side of the opioid story? This is the ugliness of it. They wouldn't give those painkillers to black folk. Because the story is that somebody wrote about it, is they didn't give us the more expensive pain-killing medicine, but and they overprescribed it to white people. And so the greed of the pharmaceutical company. See, and we gotta tell that. We gotta tell that. My grandmama one time said, son, it's nothing wrong with celebrating that you overcame. But part of the reason you remember what you overcame is to fight against what you had to overcome so that other folk won't have to deal with the same obstacles. This is just a little wisdom. Now I'm going to confess something in here. I used to hustle pool. And I could hustle, dog. And I wanted to take my girlfriend out. I'd go to the pool hall and make enough money to take her out. And in order to hustle pool, you have to learn how to make people play the game is not supposed, the way it's not supposed to be played. You create trick shots. So for instance, you can tilt a pool table up like that. And there's a way to make that shot. And folk might celebrate, oh, you made the shot going uphill. The problem is that ain't the way to play pool. So just because people make life's journey uphill, that ain't the way life's supposed to be. We all supposed to have equal protection under the law. So while I celebrate that we made it uphill, I fight to make the playing field level. And I don't ever celebrate a tilted table. And I don't ever let those off the hook who tilted the table. And I don't make the community have to fix the tilted table when the government tilted it in the first place. Y'all hear what I'm saying? Huh? So they're going to come on, Yara, and share why who's coming, and then I'm going to come back and say a little bit to try to wrap us up and point us to D.C. Is that all right? All right, I'm part Pentecostal, so I'm sorry, I just do this. Yeah, all right.
So just to underscore what Bishop Barbara said, Total Praise is coming back to sing Glory. And when you hear them say, one day when the glory comes, it will be ours. Glory hadn't come yet. And it's not going to come until this nation understands that it can feed its hungry and it feeds the hungry. That it can house the homeless and it houses the homeless. That it can take care of the sick and it takes care of the sick. And until then, we're going to keep our eyes on the prize. And know that one day this nation will have to honor the poor, the sick, the homeless. And we keep our eyes on the prize, hoping that one day this nation will judge us, not by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. Total Praise.
Wow.
one day when the glory comes, it'll be us, it'll be us. One day when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory,
glory,
hey, glory,
glory,
we will sing glory,
glory,
oh, glory. Glory,
glory,
oh, glory,
glory,
yeah, check, check,
glory,
glory.
Listen. Sold his whip for some bread, now he catch the bus to work. Last year's lease lapsed, he moved in with his old earth. She was sick, had cancer. He was a single father, helped his daughter with her homework, but never gave her the answers. Follower Christ, the youth was his life. Last week he took some boys to go see Black Panther. Something bigger than pitching grams or shooting hammers, trying to navigate the darkness on the other side of light. It was a cold winter morning, temperature below freezing. He almost missed the bus because he couldn't find his keys. Scrap it, he just left, caught the bus just in time. Worked a 14-hour shift, now follow my rhyme. He hopped off the bus, breath fight, the wind blow. His mama asleep, no keys, try climbing in the window. But a cop drove by, thought he was breaking and entering, but didn't ask questions for them shots he started sending them.
One day, when the glory comes, it'll be ours, it'll be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure, we will sing glory,
glory.
We will sing glory,
glory.
And we will sing glory,
glory.
Hallelujah, glory,
glory.
Whoa, glory,
glory.
We sing glory,
glory.
Hey, glory,
glory.
Hey, glory,
glory.
And now the war isn't won, the victory isn't won, but we will fight, fight till we're done. And we will say glory, we will say glory, we will say glory, we will say glory. From our hearts we say glory,
glory.
We will say glory,
glory.
And when our hearts will say glory,
glory.
And we will say glory,
glory.
In our hearts we say glory,
glory.
Glory,
glory.
We will sing glory,
glory.
Oh, glory,
glory.
God shattered the mold when he created me. Execution on canvas made a great MC. But for years, underrated's where they rated me. Now I'm focused on seeds, a host to provoke leaders through motivational speaking. Touch thousands, isn't it ironic? Got more fans when God took away the beat. Never went platinum or did numbers through streaming. Words inspired passion, got all of the youth dreaming. College, I didn't finish it, cop broccoli distributed. It prepared me, a product of my experience. I got four daughters, I find myself just staring. All equally beautiful, I would never compare them. And though I lost a child, not through murder or miscarriage, lost a boy through divorce that I gained in my first marriage. See him every other week, but it's not the same. Closest thing to a son, every day I feel the pain. Glory.
When the glory comes, we will be ours, it'll be ours. One day, when this war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure, and we will cry glory,
glory.
We will cry glory,
glory.
Oh, glory,
glory.
Oh, glory,
glory.
The victory is ours, glory,
glory.
No weapon formed against us shall prosper,
glory.
Because we are screaming glory, yeah.
Glory.
We are screaming glory,
glory.
Whoa, glory,
glory.
Whoa, glory,
glory.
Hey, glory,
glory.
Whoa, glory,
glory.
Said we will see glory,
glory.
Whoa, glory,
glory.
Oh, glory,
glory.
Hey, glory.
Glory.
Mm-hmm.
you give a big hand to Total Praise? Give a big hand to Total Praise. Come on. Come on. Celebrate these young folk. You know, our theomusicologist is building a 200-voice choir for 2020. And so we know where we're going to get some of the voices from. Let me tell you what we're fighting for and why, and talk to the thousands listening online and to you, and hope you will share this with at least 50 people. We need to build 30,000 people connected to social media in every way in Kentucky. 30,000 times 43 is over 1 million people. And we need to connect folk. There was a time in the ancient world when there was a family of leaders, family of dictators. They all loved to push down injustice. They loved to cater to the greedy. They were part of the murder of liberators. They would crucify them when they dared to say the Spirit of the Lord was upon them to preach good news to the poor. They were so arrogant that they created their own news media and would destroy anybody else that dared to speak against them. They were so narcissistic that they put their pictures on their money and they put their names on buildings. Almost every day of the week, they would come out on the porch of the great Roman structures, and they would tell people what they wanted them to think that day, that week, that month. They targeted their enemies. They were known for being nasty. They controlled the Senate. True story. First century AD. And this particular group, because they would go from generation to generation, they always made sure they had one senator to keep the rest of them in line. To make sure that things that they did not want to happen. No, not actually. I'm in the first century, stay with me. They built up love to brag about the military. They loved to describe how they destroyed their enemies. They called the working and the poor people the humidors, which represented 99% of the people. They called the 1% the honored ones. And they claimed that all that matters was money. In the first century, leaders like that were called Caesars. And they made things bad in the nation. So bad that a few years after the Caesar structure, because it wasn't ever just one person, one man, it was the whole structure. A whole sea system. They made the thing so bad after they crucified a leader in public in front of everybody to hope that they could shut down the movement. Because that leader was bringing people together. I'm good. That leader was bringing people together. The poor, the burdened, the bruised, and all the unaccepted folks. So they killed him. The Caesars did that. Their system did that. And by the time, about 20, maybe 30 years after that, a little bit longer, They were now persecuting all the folk that were the descendants of the movement, and had gotten bad in the nation. So bad that some folk wanted to just quit and give up, because it looked like they controlled the airwaves, they controlled the army, they controlled the political systems, they controlled the money. And a new Caesar had... see, you caused that. A new Caesar had risen to the throne, and he was extra special. He was extra. And the people were thinking about turning around, and the Apostle Paul heard about their considering retreat. And the Apostle Paul said, wait a minute, first thing I need to tell you, he said, there's a great cloud of witnesses around you, Pam, and they're cheering you, and they're saying and some of them were cut into sunder, some of them were destroyed, some of them, but they refused to serve evil for even a season. First of all, remember who you come from. And then he said, remember who you are. He said, now I know it's tough, but we, Hebrews 10, verse 39, we are not of those who shrink back unto destruction, but we are those who persevere unto the salvation of the soul. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. I raise this text tonight and this context from Hebrews because knowing who you are is more important many times than knowing who your enemy is. Knowing what your calling is. Knowing what's non-negotiable. Knowing what you believe, come hell or high water, has penetrating and practical implications, particularly when you're in crisis, when you're in a season of challenge, when things are threatening all that you hold dear, and the systems are trying to redefine you. Call community socialism. Call right wrong. Knowing who you are is key to your sanity and your ability to fight back when you are facing what Paul Tillich once called the very threat of non-being and non-existence. When the soul is in trouble, the soul of the nation or your own soul sanity. Dr. King once said of America that America has a neurotic sickness. And America has tendencies to schizophrenia. At one minute, we have a high blood pressure of creeds, but the anemia of deeds. And to say that is not to hate America. It is to diagnose her, to try to help her. Because you can't help something that's sick if you're sick too. We must know who we are. And whenever the nation is going through these deep moments of narcissistic challenge, neurotic responses, schizophrenic approaches to reality, as my friend Bob Poe said today, whenever the nation is more about the illusionists, political illusionists, who try to make us see something that ain't even there, who, as my grandmama said, excuse me, but this is what she said, pee on you and try to tell you it's raining. Whenever that is the reality, there must be a group of people, we are not of those, who refuse to shrink back, who come together around their deepest moral values, who loose themselves, who open themselves to have the moral and spiritual capacity to turn the nation's conscience and character toward the ways of love, truth, and justice rather than violence, lies, and hatred. That's what the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival, is philosophically and theologically. We are not of those who shrink back. We are not the shrinking back crowd. We are the rising up crowd. We are the crowd that recognizes in every age, somebody has to demand more from this nation. We are the ones who understand that in every age, somebody has to say, I will not shrink, I will not go away, but I will fight for the soul of this nation, and I will do it even when all I have is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. That's why this campaign is going to 25 states, the places that some folks say, the consultants say, you don't need to go there. There ain't no need to go up in the hollers of Kentucky because they're going to do something a certain way. People who've been stereotyped, people who've been down. No, we're saying we must do more. We know what the adversaries are doing. But the question is, who are we? We must mobilize more people and their allies. We must organize moral fusion coalitions that bring all people together, regardless of their race, their color, their creed. We must register people for the movement who vote. We must educate our neighbors and politicize. This movement is nonpartisan, but it's very political. It's very focused on public policy. The Poor People's Campaign, we believe what the scriptures say, that whenever Caesar or Caesar-like systems are at work, somebody must understand who they are. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction. That's why we're here, because we can't shrink back from dealing with systemic poverty. We can't shrink back from dealing with systemic racism. We can't shrink back from dealing with ecological devastation, because the last time I checked, the only place we can live is here. If we tear this up, we can't shrink back from the ravages of a war economy. We can't shrink back from the distorted moral narrative of Christian nationalism that tries to robe itself in the clothes of evangelicalism. I'm an evangelical. I'm a conservative. I'm a liberal. I'm a Pentecostal. I'm a congregationalist. I got a little Episcopal in me. In other words, I know Jesus. And I know that true evangelicalism does not begin with, are you saved? True evangelicalism begins with, when I was hungry. When Jesus said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach good news, that's the word, evangel, good news to the poor. We are here because we know, turn your neighbor and say, somebody, and tell them, say, that somebody is you, must rise up instead of shrinking back. And my friends, I have no delusion. This work is real. This is not play. This is serious stuff. When we started this campaign, the 25 states, we decided to go to El Paso, where the words and the policies of white nationalism turned loose the works of white nationalism, and those 25 folk, 20 some people were killed. We marched with some of them the week before they were killed, and when we were on our way down there, I got a text, and the text said, "If you come here, we're gonna make sure you choke on your own vomit." It's real. Did you know that 23 states, before Donald Trump was ever around, 23 states since 2010 wrote voter suppression laws? 23 states, including Kentucky. And the voter suppression, every state that is a voter suppression law state, the people that get elected through voter suppression are primarily white. And once they get elected, they use their power to hurt mostly white folk. But they get elected by pushing down black folk. Did you know there are 140 million poor and low-income people? Not 39 million, 140 million. 43% of this nation is poor and low wealth. 61% of all black people, poor people of color, are poor and low wealth. 61%. Now, that's 26 million people. 30% of white people are poor and low wealth. That's 66 million people. So there are 40 million more poor white people than black people in raw numbers. But percentage-wise, there's 30% more of the population of black people that are in poverty. Either way, it's terrible. And in the South, one-third of all the poor people live in the South, from Virginia to Kentucky, down Louisiana, Alabama, one-third. And it's almost even split, 24 million black, 24 million white, 25 million white, 24 million black, 25 million white. A third of all the poor people live in 13 states. And all of the senators from those states vote on policies that hurt the poor. You think about that. And Dr. King told us in 65 that every time poor blacks and whites have the opportunity to build a political base that could change the South, the power system, the aristocracy sows division to keep that reality from happening. This is real. This work is real. Did you know 600 people die every day from poverty, according to Columbia University? And by the way, to the students, this is not just somebody running off stuff. We have a empirically footnoted book called The Souls of Poor Folk, because the worst thing you can do, students, is be loud and wrong. Right? Listen. This is how real this is. 600 people die every day from poverty, 250,000 people a year. 7 people died from vaping, and they called it a national emergency. Did you hear what I said? 7 people died from vaping. 1 person can be shot by a racist cop and we get in the streets, and we should. But shouldn't we be even more bothered that 600 people go to their graves every day, not because God called them home, but because of the ravages of systemic poverty? There's not a person in this state that can work a minimum wage job and afford a 2-bedroom apartment. There's not a county in the country, not one, where you can work every day of your life on a minimum wage and afford an apartment. And the highest number of homeless children are LGBTQ children. And yet you still have politicians in this state that run on a platform of being against gay people. Did you know, even with the Affordable Care Act, 30-some million people still don't have health care? Even though a single-payer system, and we're not hearing this, could save $310 billion a year. And even though there are 25 of the wealthiest nations in this world, and all of them but the United States, the most wealthiest, offer some form of health care for all of its citizens. Did you know, we talk about Flint, but there are 14 million families that can't afford water. And there are 4 million families that get up every morning and can buy unleaded gas and can't buy unleaded water. Did you know that when people talk about folks shouldn't get food stamps, 1/4 of the poor families, SNAP, food stamps, only serves 25% of poor families. And 4 out of 5 SNAP recipients are children and the elderly and people with disabilities. They're not somebody somewhere making something off the government. Did you know that federal spending on immigration and enforcement has risen from $2 billion in 1976 to $17 billion in 2015? Here we are as a nation blocking immigrants. And here's the ugliness. Any Latino brothers and sisters here? Because here's the ugliness. Where are you? Any Latino brothers and sisters? Thank you. Here's the ugliness about that, particularly our Mexican brothers and sisters. How do you as a nation fix your mouth
to call somebody an illegal alien. First, when you claim all persons have been created, endowed by their creator, not all citizens. You say all persons. So to say somebody's an alien is to say, I'm not God. And I can say you're not him. And we black folk ought to be really against that. And Jewish folk and Polish folk and other Europeans that folk once didn't want here. Right? But then secondly, how can you fix your mouth as a nation, as a country? How can McConnell and all of those senators block immigrants married to an immigrant? How can they block immigrants? You know, Trump and him. Yeah, I mean, I'm just telling it, Trump and him, right? Huh? But how can you do that when the land that you're putting the wall up between is their land? Texas, we stole that in the Mexican-American War. And New Mexico and California. The first act of Henry David Thoreau's civil disobedience was his refusal to pay taxes to support the Mexican-American War because he knew that it was a false war designed to take the property because the white Texans wanted to keep their slaves and other folk wanted to keep the oil and the gold in California. And until we're willing to tell that truth, that people aren't crossing the border crossed them. Did you know that right now we have 800 military bases around the world and we spend 53 cents of every discretionary dollar on the military and only 15 cents on education and poverty and infrastructure? And we could cut the military budget in this country by $350 billion, half, and still spend more than China, Russia, and Iran, and North Korea combined. And that the majority of the money is not going to soldiers, because most combat soldiers that come back, they make barely a wage. Some of them under $30,000, $34,000 a year, poverty wages. The money is going to the CEOs of the defense companies who make money off of killing and design weapon systems that the Pentagon doesn't even want. But that's the high level. In Kentucky, did you know 46% of the people in Kentucky are poor? Just get that. Not 4%. 46%. 56% of all the children, somebody has got to say, we're not going to shrink back. 56% of the children, and I do these stats, and I don't ever do them first in race because people have tried to racialize poverty. Like poverty is a black, brown issue, therefore it's an issue on the margin. No, no. 1.6 million of the 2 million people in Kentucky that are poor are white. Are white people. 42% of white people, 65% of people of color are poor in Kentucky, but that's only 435,000 people. In Kentucky, 312,000 residents cannot vote due to felony disenfranchisement. That's almost that's over a quarter million people. 92,000 veterans have incomes below $35,000. 271,000 people are uninsured. 33% of the census tracts, people can't afford their water. In Kentucky, 4,000 people are homeless. In Kentucky, you have to work 77 hours a week on a minimum wage to probably afford a two-bedroom apartment. In Kentucky, 870,000 workers make less than $15 an hour. That's 50% of Kentucky's workforce. And the richest 1% of Kentucky residents are expected to get 26% of the benefits of the new federal tax law under Trump. Their average cut is expected to be $4,700, while the poorest 20% are expected to pay $70 more. And Kentucky has spent $1.3 billion in subsidies for corporations, while coal miners go without insurance and die. That's what's real.
And you got a senator here in McConnell, the Senate leader, who would rather use his power to support corporations, to stack the courts, and to block voting rights and block living wages than to address poverty and health care, and then has the nerve to say that he believes in a moral agenda. And it doesn't have to be this way. If we raise the minimum wage to 15 right now, it would pay for 49 million people to go to a living wage, and it would pump $328 million a year into the society. If we repeal the Trump tax cuts and establish fair taxes on the wealthy and corporations and Wall Street, we could generate $886 billion a year. And it is a shame and a disgrace that when we talk about the poor, somebody, the poor need to be more moral. They need to learn how to do right and live right and follow certain things. But when it comes to wealthy corporations, we say they're too big to fail, and we bail them out with free, no-interest money. They're too big to fail, but communities are not too precious to fail. Something wrong with that. And in 2018, if Boeing, just one defense company, if we had just taken one contract from them, $27 billion, we could have expanded Medicaid in the 14 states that did not expand it. So we know. We know what the problem is. It's real. That's why we got to do what we're doing. And in the face of this, my friends, we got to say, okay, we've mourned now. We've hurt. We've cried. It's crazy. The only thing I don't want you to say is we ain't never seen it like this, because that means you don't know history. I'm glad we went to Corbin the other day to remind us that 100 years ago, the same thing that's happening today was happening in 1919. You had racism in the White House and a president called Woodrow Wilson, who glorified Birth of the Nation and the role of the Klan. You had wealthy people attacking the poor, trying to block any kind of assistance to the poor and working people, and they drove the country into the Great Depression. You had black men being shot and killed because they were coming back from war with pride. And that's why in 1919 in Corbin, they rounded up 250 and sent them out of that city. But it wasn't just Corbin, it was Chicago. It was all over the country, because it was called the Red Summer, the Red Scare. And you know the language they used to say, to cause the country to be okay with it? Those people are socialists. They're socialists, see? And by some folks' definition of socialists, I was speaking the other day to a group, and I said, you know, Jesus never charged a leper a copay for healing. Jesus always fed the hungry. So I said, now, by the definition of the extremists, Jesus was a socialist. Now, I didn't say that. Jesus, to me, is a Jesus. Jesus is a Savior. Jesus is a Messiah. But by their logic, anybody that helps anybody is a socialist. And we know. Now the question is, what are we going to do? And this campaign says, in the midst of this, we must do more. Now, where did I get this from? Did I get this out of the sky? No, it's as old as this nation. In 1852, the Supreme Court forced a guy on the Supreme Court named Taney. He should have never been on the Supreme Court. He got on the Supreme Court, and he became Chief Justice, and he led the way for the Dred Scott decision that said a black man had no rights that a white man ever had to pay any attention to. 3 months after that decision, the day of that decision, people were going around saying, it's over. Abolition is over. There's nothing we can do. And 3 months later, they asked Frederick Douglass to speak. What do you have to say, Mr. Douglass? What do you have to say? Douglass had to know who he was. Douglass had to know that I am not of those who shrink back unto destruction. So Douglass mounted the pulpit, and this is what he said. One thing is for certain, the slaveholders are in earnest. They mean to cling to their slaves as long as they can to the bitter end. This very attempt to blot out forever the hopes of an enslaved people, though, may be one necessary link in the chain of preparatory events to the downfall and complete overthrow of the whole system. Parenthesis, what if Trump is just a necessary link? What if the way people are causing folk to hurt is forcing us together, and that pride cometh before destruction? And what we're... Frederick Douglass said, let me tell you something. Yes, the Supreme Court has ruled, but there's a higher court. He said, yes, Goliath is real, but keep reading. David comes on the scene. He said, the whole history of the anti-slavery movement is studded with proof that every measure devised and executed to ally and diminish the anti-slavery agitation has only served to increase, intensify, embolden that agitation. In other words, Douglass said, what they are doing isn't going to stop us. It's only going to cause us to rise up even more. Mother Jones, that great white labor Christian women's voting rights leader in the 800, she told a group in times much worse than the times we're in. She said, listen, I need to tell y'all who you are. Your organization is not a praying institution. We got enough of them. We need a fighting institution. We need an educational organization, because we need some folk that understand you pray for the dead, but you fight like hell for the living. Help me, don't. You got to know who you are. Right here in Kentucky, there was a justice named Harlan from Harlan County. He was on the Supreme Court. He was called the Great Dissenter. He'd vote by himself. He didn't care. If he was right, he'd stand up by himself. He was the lone vote to stop the overturn of the 1875 Civil Rights Act. He was the only justice from Kentucky that voted no in Plessy versus Ferguson. And this is what he said. He said, I may be a lone dissenter now, but this nation will have to answer this reality. In respect of civil rights, all citizens are equal before the law. The humblest is the peer of the most powerful. The law regards man as man and takes no account of his surroundings or his color. And because Harlan didn't shrink, Thurgood Marshall was able to pick up his dissent and write what overturned. Cesar Chavez told folk, once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. If you can just get people to start something, and I stop by to tell you, we ought to start something in Kentucky. We ought to stir up something in Kentucky. Because once you get it started, and once people feel pride, and once oppressed people aren't afraid anymore, you can't stop them from doing what they need to do. Nelson Mandela was in a jail, but Nelson Mandela almost had a breakdown. But then he decided, I'm going to turn this jail into a sparring ring. I'm going to turn this jail into a place of preparation for liberation. And I'm not going to get free outside the jail. I'm going to get free inside the jail. And so Nelson would get up every morning and say, out of the night that covers me, black as a pole from pit to pit, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the failed clutches of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horrors of the years shade, and yet the menace of the years shall find and find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul. You hear what I'm talking about? We must know who we are. And I need Kentucky. We got to have Kentucky. I need Kentucky to remember that it was in 1964 that 10,000 people from across Kentucky rallied at the state capitol in Frankfort in support of a bill desegregating public accommodation. And a group of 32 young people conducted a hunger strike in the General Assembly from the gallery. Well, I know who you are, Kentucky. Yeah. I know who you are. This is the home of Georgia Davis Powers. I know who you are. This is the home of Lyman T. Johnson, best known as the plaintiff who's opened the University of Kentucky. I know who you are now. I know who Kentucky is. This is the home of Suzanne Kling Post, and this is the home of Julian Bond, and this is the home of Tom Moffitt with the Kentucky Alliance Against Racism and Political Oppression. I know who you are. And this is the home of Ann Braden that said, you don't just need black folk talking about racism. You need white folk talking about racism. I know who you are. I know who you are. And because that's in your DNA, every attack on immigrants, every regressive policy, every denial of health care, every voter suppression, every hurt to working people should only cause the people in Kentucky to intensify, increase, and embolden your agitation. Ask your neighbor, do you know who we are? You don't come from the people who quit and shrink back. Oh, no. You come from the folk that stand up. It's in your DNA. It's a part of the Holy Ghost that's inside of you. And we need Kentucky to rise up now. Rise up for voting rights. Rise up for living wages. Rise up and fight poverty. Rise up for housing. Rise up for health care. Rise up for clean, affordable water. Rise up for high quality, free education and college education. Rise up for fair taxes. Rise up against the regressivism of McConnell. Rise up for peace. Rise up for jobs. Rise up for security. Do you know who you are? Hey! You got the power. And I'll stop by to tell you, you got power if you rise up. Trump only cheated by 80,000 votes, but 5 million people didn't vote for it. Rise up, I tell you. Rise up, I tell you. Right here in Kentucky in 2014, McConnell won by 22,000 votes, but 2,494,000 votes stayed home. If you rise up, if you let folk know who they are and what they can do, 140 million poor people is more people than were represented in all the people that voted in 2016. Rise up. The 2 million poor and low-income people in Kentucky are the difference makers in this state. If we organize them, if we mobilize them, we can rise up. And since I am a preacher from the South, I don't mind, I hope the preachers don't mind if I holler one time. If God be for you, good God from Zion, it doesn't matter who's against you. Rise up. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. Rise up. We are not of those who shrink back unto destruction. Rise up. Rise up. There's a song that says, it's the waking, it's not the waking, it's the rising. You got folks saying you need to get woke. But if you're woke and still in bed, you still ain't doing nothing. Mavis Staples and Hozier said, you got to rise. It's rising time now. It's not the waking, it's the rising. And it's time for us to cry power. People in the hills got power. People in Lexington got power. People in Georgetown got power. People all over Kentucky got power. It's not the waking, it's the rising. Rise up. Before you leave, grab somebody by the hand. You can keep playing. Come on, Laura. Hey, baby, how you doing? That's who we rising up for.
That's right.
Come on, give a hand, give a hand.
Right.
Come on, give a hand, give a hand. Hey, baby. Now, have you signed up? Raise your hand. Have you signed up? Have you signed up? Have you filled the cards out? Don't leave here if you haven't. Have you got on Twitter? Bring the cards. Anybody, you can let go of your hands for a minute. Anybody need cards? Just a minute. Don't let go too long. If you need a card, raise your hand. If you need something to take with you, yeah. We got to do this, y'all.
That's right.
And the purpose of the 2020 is to put impact people, not people speaking. This is the longest you'll probably hear me ever speak. But on 2020, we're going to push the folk forward. We're going to show the nation the face of poverty. And the people who've been impacted are also going to give the solutions. And we're going to show the whole world. And why are we doing it June 2020? Ain't no need to do it in August after the conventions. The conventions are in July. So we want to serve notice on Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
You ain't got to ask us for our vote. Do right by poor people.
Right.
Say you're going to raise living wages. Say you're going to invest in education. Say you're going to make sure everybody has health care. We'll know who to vote for. And change has only come when people have chosen to know who they are, who they were, and they chose to rise up no matter what. There's an army rising. Look at it. It's all over this country. We were in Louisiana. There's an army down there rising. There's an army rising. There's an army rising. People have faced worse before. And there's an army rising, and we're not going to be together just through 2020, even though we're going to be together in 2020. And we're going to have an impact in 2020.
Yeah.
But we're going to have an impact in 2020 that's so loud, we ain't going to never be ignored again. Because we're going to fight. And whoever's in the way, we're going to love them, but if they need a vacation out of office, we're going to love them enough to send them home and let them think about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they used to put you in the corner, say, go over there and think about yourself.
That's right.
We got, you know, but it's time. Come here, baby. Help her up here. Come here, baby. Come here. Let her come here. Don't let her trip. Amen. Come here. It's time to write. Come on, Yara. Hey, give me a hand. Give me a hand. There you go. Come on. Come on in the middle, Yara. There's an army. Break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. I want you to sing that with her.
Break every chain.
And then stay here for 3 minutes so that the state leaders can dismiss us properly. Love you, Kentucky. All the preachers, wave your hand. Love you, preachers. Love you. We're going on now to the next state. And we'll see you in D.C. Every city, we need a bus. Every county, we need a bus. Every organization, we need a bus. And bring the babies with you. Because we're fighting for their world, too. That's really what we're fighting for. Amen. If you fought before, suit up one more time. If you're living off other people's sacrifice, it's time for you to pay your dues. If you're young, suit up for the first time. Because God has us alive in this morning. Because God knows he can count on us not to shrink, but to persevere until the salvation of the soul. God bless you. Love you, Kentucky. Oh, there's an army.
Thank you, Georgetown. And before we dismiss, I don't know where Divine Karama went, but he was going to give us spoken word, but I don't see him right now. So what we want you all to know is that we totally appreciate you all letting us come to Georgetown College. And I don't know if we gave proper thanks to Miss Robbie Barber. We also would like for you all to know that in the Student Center, we have refreshments for you all to come and join us, have conversation. Now, if I was to tell you that we are fundraising to make sure that everybody in Kentucky gets to Washington, D.C., how many of you would like to go to Washington, D.C., June 20th, 2020? Thank you. I hope you put something in your toolkit that you heard tonight from the speakers as well as Dr. Barber. And I promised somebody I'd do this. Hey, Reverend Liz, we miss you. Thank you all for coming. I just need y'all to do one thing for me. Are y'all ready? 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 2020. All right, good night from the coordinating committee, the planning team in Georgetown. We'll see you again. Thank you from the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign.